Hello and welcome to Banfield. We have gotten fully a month's worth of jaw-dropping headlines and details from the Gabby Petito, Brian Laundrie story, and all of it has unloaded in just the past hour. Cassie Laundrie, Brian's own sister, whom the family's attorney essentially made out to be a liar just days ago, tonight came firing back from her very own front yard. But of everything we heard, and you are about to hear, in that impromptu 20-minute interview, the most shocking may be Cassie's answer to two simple questions. And it is the same answer. Are your parents involved in hiding Brian from authorities? I don't know. Did Brian kill Gabby? Again, I don't know. Not no, not never. No, it's not possible. No, that was not what she said. She said, I don't know. Let me get right to News Nation's Brian Enten to play this remarkable sound and break down what all of this means. He's out in front of the Laundrie home. I never expected to hear something like this. The Laundrie family has been the most quiet and secretive in so many of the criminal stories I've covered. And then out comes Cassie, Brian.
Yeah, I'm still processing all of this, Ashley, because you mentioned it. Really, this all came down within the last hour, hour and a half. And there are so many nuggets in the video you're about to hear that shed new light on all of this. We're just going to have to go through them all one by one. But first, before we get to it, I want to quickly walk you through how this all came down. Basically, you know the protesters that have been outside the house here every day. They were here this afternoon. They left and they went to Cassie's house and they started protesting in front of her house. And according to them, she got so annoyed with them being there that she decided she was going to walk right out onto the front lawn and just start talking to them for roughly 20 minutes or so and answering all of their questions. And then we were able to obtain that video, Ashley.
Okay, well, I'm just being told that we have some fresh new videotape into our control room from that interview. We've been turning it around as quickly as possible, Brian. Let me just ask my control room which part of this we can air right now, because I know we've been spinning it quickly. And I know that also, Brian, as we do this, that you've been playing excerpts of this video throughout the evening on News Nation. Let me just go ahead and toss to the first one that we have. I haven't got any context of it at all. I can't, unfortunately, tell you what it is, but take a look. Listen to this.
When Gabby was missing, the parents weren't even looking for her. They weren't even out looking for her.
We don't even know what they knew.
We can assume. Do you know that she was missing when they went to Fort DeSoto?
No.
You didn't have
September
11th, that she was missing?
The detective that was working with Gabby's mom called me up while we were on vacation.
We were in Orlando.
And then I called her back because we were eating dinner, and I told her everything she needs to know. We told them from day one that we were at Fort DeSoto with them on the 6th and that they came over here on the 1st. The police has known everything that's out there the whole time, from September 11th night on. That's when I became involved, and I knew nothing before that.
So, Brian, it's sort of hard to make out a lot of this. I don't know what part of the interview this comes from, but do you get the sense from this 20-minute conversation that she had that she has given up on the silence and given up on the story that he's gone over to a swamp and, you know, is just missing and not on the run?
I think she's just frustrated, and that's why she came out. She gave a lot of I don't know answers. Do you know what your parents, what do your parents know? She said, I don't know. But what was interesting there, she talked about when she saw Brian at the campground. She claims she didn't even know that Brian was going to be there. And you heard her just say, she also says that she didn't know where Gabby was, which we've been talking about this for weeks now, Ashley, wondering, what was she thinking when Gabby wasn't there, when her brother's fiance was suddenly missing?
Okay, Brian, we have another one of these short clips that's just rolling in. So we're going to all listen to it together and hear what's on it at the same time. Take a look.
My parents' lawyer really screwed me over by saying that he just stopped
by. Well, I saw the comment that
he did
made.
Not
he...
just stop by on the way home, and I was livid, and I'm not speaking to anybody.
Yeah, no.
I'm done. Because that put me in danger. That made my kids find out this horrible way with questions. Yep. We were waiting until there was some kind of closure, so the kids were just sad. Instead of sad, worried, and now really scared of you guys.
So, Brian, if I'm not mistaken, she's now saying he did not just stop by my house on September 1st, the day the card reader saw that van coming back into Florida. What are we to make of that?
Well, she's saying that she only thought her parents were going to stop by and that Brian was also there. But did you hear that, Ashley? She said, basically, my parents are screwing me over, which this is all so new to us. We didn't know for the last month whether to think this whole family was talking and sort of on the same page. But now we know there is division within the Laundrie family. I mean, she flat out said it. She says right now her parents in the house behind me are screwing her over.
I thought she was saying that her lawyer had screwed her over. I was unaware that she was saying this about both. I think we have another piece of this tape, and I'm just going to flat out apologize to the herky-jerky production tonight, but we're literally getting this in and churning it out just as quickly as it comes into our feed room, so I can't once again give you the context for the next bite, but let's have a listen together.
It's home for 2 weeks straight.
I know. I've been watching.
There's people out there. They feel your family's involved. A cloud of suspicion. Sure. The reason why we're here for
The media ended up misconstruing what I said when they asked me if I had seen my brother. Like I said in the beginning, they didn't say, have you seen Brian? It was, what's the weirdest thing about this all? It was, I haven't been able to speak to my brother. I tried to contact them after this. I tried to contact my family after this. I hadn't been able to speak to my brother.
Do you know about any additional burner phones?
I have no idea.
So you don't know nothing?
No. Like, she's my brother that I don't talk to that much.
And the parents ain't talking to you. Your own parents are not talking to you for what reason?
The lawyer said not.
Whose lawyer?
Their parents' lawyer.
Their lawyers.
Have a lawyer. We have nothing to hide. We were told not to talk to anybody. And I'm upset that we have to come out and do this and then explain myself to the FBI.
So, Brian, your thoughts as you hear that?
Well, basically, and you were right, I correct myself, she was saying that the lawyer has screwed her over, although she's also saying there's issues with her parents. I mean, you heard her say right there that she is not talking to her parents, that the lawyer has basically told them not to talk. And then it was interesting, she explained more of what she said happened with that ABC interview. Remember the interview we talked about so much last week? She says that her words were misconstrued, and now we know she had, in fact, seen Brian after Brian got back from his trip.
Okay, so I'm going to work with the control room and you and me all at the same time live on the air, so the viewers sort of get to see the sausage making of live television. But I've got a number of different pieces of sound that have come in, and I want to just ask the control room if they can play another grouping of these clips that we got that is different than the first three that we've just aired. I'm just going to ask the control room if they have the next one ready to go. Yep, they do. Okay, let's have a look together. Take a peek.
What were your thoughts after you found out she was missing and your brother was here by himself and in her van and ran up $1,000 on her credit card?
These are things we're not allowed to answer.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Brian hit Gabby?
No.
Have you ever seen him fight?
No.
Have you ever seen him hit any woman?
No, I've never seen him be abusive or angry in anything. No.
You know that we talked to neighbors. We canvassed your parents' neighborhood.
Yeah.
They've heard screams coming out of your parents' house on multiple occasions.
Your parents' house.
Okay. Screams.
I don't know what to tell you about that.
Might have been our kids. We lived there for a year.
Oh, you lived at the home in Wabasso?
Yeah.
Gabby and Brian lived with us.
Next, okay? Okay, so Brian, again, these are all coming in sort of out of order, I think, a little bit. Any thoughts on that last one before? I'm just trying to curate the next soundbite that I think is really critical in this story, and that's Cassie Laundrie really changing her tune completely from that first interview that we got with her, where she, ABC got with her, I should say, where she said, I just wish I'd been able to speak with him. And now she's answering very definitively that she doesn't really know what is happening with her brother or her parents. But before we do that, just comment on that last piece of sound, Brian, that you just heard. What were your thoughts on that last little bit?
Well, there's cars out here outside the house. I'm just going to move over for a second. Basically, she's saying what other people have told us on both sides of the family, that she did not sense that there was any sort of domestic violence issue between Brian and Gabby, that she never saw any signs. And she also said, which we've never heard before, she says that she wasn't that close to her brother, Brian.
Well, I don't know. It's hard to tell just from looking at them, but it looks like there might be an age difference between them. She's clearly already off on her own, you know, with a family and nieces and nephews that are old enough to be cognizant of Gabby. And he's, you know, only 23 and not yet married and no children. I don't know what their ages are, but they certainly seem like they're in a different place in their lives, maturity-wise. Okay, this next one, I think, Brian, is the clincher. I just, when I saw it, I had to take a second look. Oh, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say, because I'm thinking about what you're saying about the age difference and her saying they're not that close, and I'm just trying to think of the other side of that. You know, she was also just a few weeks ago sharing postcards that Gabby had written her kids about the trip and how close she was saying how close they all were and how much they all loved each other. And we also know that she saw Brian two times, really within a week's time, when he returned from the trip. The first time was when he came to her house on the first, and then she saw him just like 5 or 6 days later when the family went camping. So I just want to keep that in mind as she says that they weren't that close.
Yeah, and I also think it's important to know that he was living in that little yellow bungalow behind you with Gabby, and I think you had told us is in that front room right behind where you're standing, off to the left of the front door, correct? That was where the bedroom of Brian and Gabby together, right? That's the one?
Yeah,
she didn't live there at the
same
time.
Yeah, we actually know. Well, this is interesting. We've learned this recently. So she lived in this house before her parents. She was living here, and then she sort of passed it on to her parents to live here. So she's also very familiar with this house and this neighborhood.
Boy, I bet she's glad she's not living there now. All right, Brian, I want to air another one of those soundbites. This is the key, the one that I think is so important to listen to and listen to again. It is the quintessential question, and it is the most surprising answer of this entire interview. It gets right to the heart of this story that has been gripping the nation for the last 5 weeks, and that is, you know, did your brother kill Gabby? So have a listen to this.
My parents' lawyer really screwed me over by saying that he just
stopped by. Well, I saw the comment that
he did not just stop by on the way home, and I was livid, and I'm not speaking to anybody.
Yeah.
Do you think Brian killed Gabby?
I don't know. Silence was not guilt. Silence was
guilt. Well, nobody came here until the lie.
Sooner he's found the sooner this is over for us. Yeah.
So, Brian, if that, I don't know, you would expect a sister to say, are you kidding me? What kind of a question is that? Instead, she says, I don't know. But then she also tempers it by saying silence, you know, isn't an admission of guilt or anything like that. I suppose she has a point there.
Yeah, and obviously, I mean, the attorney has been telling the family to stay quiet and probably telling them that that's in their best interest. So they've been trying to stay quiet. But yeah, I mean, to think when she's asked, did your brother do this, when she says, I don't know, I mean, you would think there would possibly be a response of, you know, he's such a good guy, I know, there's no way. So I think she just, you know, throughout the entire thing, she really doesn't go out of her way to stand up for her brother, Brian Laundrie.
No, I think that's why I was so shocked, Brian, is that I expected for her to be angry at the press and say, you all need to just, you know, bug off. But it was more a bewildered woman who didn't quite know where she should be in this whole narrative, because it's just too difficult to position herself. All right, Brian, I have to fit in a break. Do not go anywhere, because we've just got another piece of sound in, and it's important because I remember last week, and I think you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong, Brian, Joe Petita was asked about belongings of Gabby when he was at his news conference in New York, and I think the family in New York said they haven't even received those belongings of Gabby back that were in that little yellow bungalow behind you. And now we are getting the definitive answer from Brian's sister. We're going to play that after the break, and Brian Enten is going to be back with us in just a moment. Brian Laundrie is nowhere to be found right now, but that is not the same for his sister. She is on her front lawn, and she is talking, not a little, not just a comment, a lot. 20 minutes worth of bombshells tonight about her brother, perhaps the most significant of which, she is not defending him. She's not convicting him. but she's not defending him, which is shocking. I'm going to have more of those interview bites in just a moment. Brian Enten has been doing an incredible job. But in the meantime, I just need you to know something. Tomorrow marks 3 weeks since Brian, according to his parents, drove off in that silver Mustang to go, what, hiking around that marshy, alligator-infested 25,000-acre nature preserve not far from the family's home in Northport. You have heard this over and over till you're sick. There hasn't been a confirmed sighting since, which is no doubt why the FBI just spent another day in that swamp with the dogs now and the airboats and the experts. It's why they may be back tomorrow because, that's all the laundries have told them. Tonight, however, there is reason to believe something else, that that trail may have gone cold a long time ago, and that this one might be red hot. It's the Appalachian Trail. And if you had a chance to pick a place to hide from the authorities, you could do worse than that red line. Over the weekend, a hiker told police that he is almost positive he encountered Gabby Petito's fiancé near the Tennessee-North Carolina border. By the map, that's 700 miles away from the Florida swamp. But whoever this mystery figure was, he apparently wanted to go a heck of a lot farther than where he was.
He was talking wild. He said that his girlfriend loved him and he had to go out to California to see her. And he was asking me how to get to California. And I said, well, you can get on I-40 right there and drive west and you'll get there. And he said, no, I think I can go this way, and kind of left. But he was acting funny. And I wasn't sure about what he looked like. And then I went and parked and pulled up the photographs of him. And I'm 99.99% sure that was him.
To be clear, that sighting is unconfirmed at this point, but if it did happen, it tells us more than Laundrie's whereabouts and demeanor at the moment. It tells us that he was recognizable to somebody who was not even on the lookout for him. In a few minutes, we're going to be joined again by the world's preeminent forensic artist with some sketches that she did just for us on Brian Laundrie's look and how it might have changed, assuming he wants not to be recognized. Lots of disguises that he could be using, and you will see what he looks like in them. First, so I want to get back to News Nation's Brian Enten, live in Northport, Florida, where I dare say we have not yet begun to feel the true impact of Brian Laundrie's sister and her comments tonight to reporters. Brian, you're in front of the little yellow house. I'm assuming they're not talking, Mr. and Mrs. Laundrie, but what Cassie has said tonight is nothing short of earth-shattering.
Yeah, we're outside the house. I keep getting tweets while we're on your show that the light is flickering. I haven't caught it yet, but this has happened a few nights in a row. People keep saying the light's going on and off behind you. I haven't seen it. But yeah, I mean, I can only imagine what the parents are thinking inside in light of their daughter coming out on the front lawn. And I want to also talk about what you were just talking about with the Appalachian Trail. The 911 call you played from the hiker, I actually spoke to him for quite a while today on the phone. His name is Dennis. He's an engineer by trade. Sounded like a very credible guy, told me he was very detail-oriented, has been following this case, knew what Brian Laundrie looks like, and he says he is 99.9% sure that it was Brian Laundrie. The strange things are is he saw him in a white pickup truck. There are some things that don't add up. Also, I've been, you know, reminding people all day long, you know, Brian Laundrie sort of does have a common look. I mean, he's tall, he's skinny, he's bald, he's a white guy. And a lot of people have thought that they've seen him and it hasn't been him. But speaking to Dennis, the hiker, he said he was very sure.
Well, you know, he's nondescript, but he's a hiker. That's what he does. So it would make perfect sense that the Appalachian Trail would be a good place to hide as well. Okay, Brian, back to Cassie Laundrie and some of those comments. You know, I don't know what is going on the phone between the people in the house behind you and Cassie, but she had some choice words about her family, saying that she feels like she's losing them. Let me play that excerpt where she talks about that. Have a look.
The family's upset because they're not getting the belongings from Gabby that are in your parents' home.
We have no idea what they have or don't have.
They won't give them.
I don't know.
The parents have hung up the phone on them. I mean, it's just frustrating, you know?
I'd also like to say that, not to upset Mr. Petito any further, but I did not get any phone calls from him in the days prior to this September 11th. September 11th, I've checked my phone records. I don't see any. He maybe had the wrong number for me. So I was not ignoring his phone calls. Right. I didn't get them.
Our right. first one was from the...
And that could have happened. County. He could have got the wrong phone number. It's very easy. So...
And we called them right back.
And I am losing my parents and my brother and my children's aunt and my future sister-in-law on top of this. And you're not helping.
Why your parents? Why your parents? You're talking about Christmas.
They're not talking to us either.
Why aren't they talking to you guys?
If I knew... I would say, I don't know.
Do you think they're involved, your parents?
I don't know. Oh. At Fort DeSoto on the 6th, we got there at around 2 o'clock, and we left around 8 because the kids had school the next day.
On the 6th?
On the 6th. We only stayed for about 6 hours.
Who was there?
My mom, my dad, my brother. We had s'mores. We had dinner.
What did Brian say anything about Gabby?
We had our kids there. Nothing came up.
He didn't say anything about Gabby?
No. We've told the FBI everything.
Did Brian go...
The world does not need to know what the FBI knows.
Okay, Brian, that was a combination of Gabby's things, which we know the Petitos had asked about. They hadn't received her things. That's what Cassie had to say about them. She also commented that she's losing her family at the same time because she can't talk to them. And this is what she said, Brian, about her brother arriving home from this trip with his fiance, surprisingly, on September the 1st. Take a look.
So when he came here September 1st, right? You said he came. What did he come here for?
My parents wanted to surprise the kids to pick them up at school. I did not know that Brian was with them when we had previously planned to hang out with them. This is not what we want to be doing. This is not how we want the world to find out when we're angry and upset. But I can't have my kids be crying for 3 days in a row.
What did the FBI take out of the house here? Like what?
Nothing.
They came here, though.
Yes.
During
we met with them multiple times.
You met with them multiple times.
Yeah.
Did they ask you for like polygraphs or anything like that?
No, but
no.
Brian, if you had to sum up everything that Cassie Landry has said tonight, what would you say?
I think there is major division between the family. She is not, bottom line, she is not really defending her brother. And I'm just listening to a lot of this in real time, too. It's so fascinating that these are the protesters that I've seen every day out here on the bullhorns shouting at the parents that now have this very open one-on-one interview getting all these details from Cassie Landry. It's just so bizarre.
I can't say that there hasn't been much about this story that is bizarre, including the police showing up this weekend with decibel readers and telling the protesters that they are going over the legal decibel level for the noise that they are creating. And then the protesters going after the police. It just, like, it doesn't end. All right, Brian, keep an eye. I did not see any flickering behind you. I was watching just to make sure, but we will keep an eye on it. And Brian, excellent work on getting all of that reporting in. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Ashley.
Man, he has been doing such an amazing job tracking this story. And tracking Brian is one thing, the location of him, right? But what if he's changed how he looks? What if he's in disguise when, I don't know, you pass by him in a cafe or on the Appalachian Trail or when the feds walk right by him on the sidewalk? The world's most successful forensic artist has created a series of sketches exclusively for us on what she thinks that young man Brian Landry could be looking like right now. Where is Brian Landry? He's been on the run for at least 3 weeks now, and so far law enforcement doesn't seem to be any closer to catching him. Of course, thousands of tips have been called in, emailed in to the FBI, the police, John Walsh, and even Dog the Bounty Hunter. And there have been hundreds of possible sightings of him, but nothing definitive so far. Why has it been so difficult to track this young man down? Is it that he's such a cunning outdoorsman that he's been able to stay off the grid and avoid detection? Or more likely, has he changed his appearance just enough that he's mostly unrecognizable? Like, would you recognize him if, say, he was 15 pounds lighter? What if he shaved his beard? What if he was wearing a disguise? How would you be able to spot this fairly nondescript-looking guy then? For that, I'm joined by Lois Gibson. She worked as a forensic artist for the Houston Police Department since 1989. Her sketches have helped law enforcement identify more than 1,000 suspects, and she's in the Guinness Book of World Record as the most successful forensic artist. Okay, so Lois, I want to just go through the photographs that you've created basically as a one-by-one. So let's start with... It's been a month or so. I want you to show me what he might look like with a month's worth of hair growth, maybe lightened if he's had a chance to buy some bleach in a drugstore and go into a gas station and use bleach on his hair and beard. Like, what can you show me?
Okay, Ashley, here's what I've got. I've got my opinion, having worked murders for 39 years. This is what I think it would do. Now, if you want to think of him not shaving, then he's so easily recognizable. He has, like, super... distinctive facial hair. It's incredibly distinctive. So if I were him, I would shave. But if he shaves, he looks more different as a shaved man, way different than when he's wearing facial hair. But I went to dental school. He's got unusual dentition. Here he is, like I think he's going to be. He's going to have too much sun. I've had him lose weight. But his maxillary lateral incisor kicks out a little bit right here. So the bottom edge of his teeth, which you're going to notice if it's somebody you've seen in high school, 50 years later at the reunion, you're going to recognize these teeth, very recognizable. And also the center line is switched, so his teeth go that way. It's just unusual. It's not ugly, but it's distinctive. So there's my version. The number one item that I've found criminals use for a disguise is a ball cap. So there's a ball cap, and then I have ball cap, and I have sunglasses. Hello. The second most popular is to have sunglasses. So this is it.
So up on the,
if he didn't shave, you all realize what he looks like here. That's my opinion.
Yeah, is the one? It's hard for me to tell in the light, but is the one up on the top right, high up on the right-hand corner of the easel, is that blonde or is that just a light hitting it in a weird way?
No, you're absolutely right. I made him be blonde. It's been less than a month, so your hair on your head grows.
Can you hold it up higher? Just hold it up higher in the middle of the easel so we can see it.
A third of an inch
a month.
Hold
it up a little higher if you can, please, Lois. We can't see it. There you go.
Okay, your hair grows a third of an inch a month. So I did say I think he would bleach it, a real cheap bleach from a convenience store. And so he's got bleached one third of an inch hair. So that's it. I mean, but if he has that facial hair, you're going to recognize him. And I believe he will always wear a ball cap because the criminals with which I've worked, they're going to wear ball caps. I can't tell you how sick I am after 39 years of ball caps.
Yeah. Lois, when I saw Scott Peterson do a really bad bleach job on his hair, it made me think he didn't know how to do it. And it also made me think that the hair on your head will bleach at a different rate than, say, your eyebrows or your facial hair. And it kind of came out orange. Is that the same? What is the issue with facial hair? These men might not be smart enough to realize how the Clairol works.
Oh, some people love their mustache. Some men folk love their mustache or their beard so much they don't shave it, even though they've killed 4 people. But also, I got a guy pulled in, Michael Brazier from Arkansas. He had murdered Lisa Don Hogue in Houston. So when they found him, he had bleached his goatee and his mustache. You're right. Like you said, orange. You're right now that you've had a really bad bleach job. But he did his eyebrows, too, which was thorough. And he became morbidly obese. And he was in a trailer park, so he tried his best, but they found him. My drawing looked like him, but without the bleached facial hair. So you got to be a good guesser at this work. I've been able to guess hair on skulls, and all it is a bone. It's a skull. And I've gotten the hair right every time except for once. The color, the style even. It's crazy. So this is my guess on Brian Laundrie.
With the suntan and 10 pounds lighter, that's what he would look like. Lois, thank you for that. As we go into this story and the weeks become months, we're going to keep coming to you for how the changes might, appear going into the winter months, et cetera, and, being on the road that much longer, maybe losing that much more weight. Lois Gibson, thank you. Appreciate that. Coming up. Another complete right turn, and it is from the being on the run to the Royals. Prince Andrew, he's holding a yard sale to help pay his legal bills. The yard also comes with a lovely house behind it, a ski house in Switzerland, to the tune of over $20 $1,000. Yes, all that can be yours if you're okay with everything that happened inside it. We're back right after this. For sale, fancy ski chalet nestled in the cozy Swiss Alps, tastefully appointed by the royals themselves and visited by the rich and famous. It is a relative steal at $23 million. You know, chump change. Prince Andrew is shedding some property, reportedly selling off some of his favorite things, like his expensive vacation home in Switzerland, because word is he needs cold, hard cash to pay his mounting legal bills. Some of them coming airmail from Los Angeles, where he has just hired a high-power Los Angeles attorney named Melissa Lerner. It is all because of the legal battles that he's in over allegations of sex assault involving a minor. But the sale of that Swiss chalet may not be enough. He may just need to bow to the queen to help cover the mounting costs of this colossal embarrassment. Joining us now, royal watcher Hillary Fordwich, columnist Rob Shooter. He's the author of The Four-Word Answer and legal analyst and chief correspondent for Inside Edition, Jim Murray. So hello to all three of you. Hillary, I'm going to begin with you. The Swiss chalet, and that's a bow to my Canadian friends who know that Swiss chalet means something entirely different than somewhere to ski in Europe. But it seems as though I can't understand why he'd need to sell a chalet when the royals are some of the richest people in the world. Don't they just have the money?
Well, they do, and pleasure to be back with you again, Ashley. But they do, and the Queen is actually purportedly going to be covering his legal fees. But I think the onus has come down to there's a lot of pressure from more senior royals that Prince Andrew takes responsibility himself. So that chalet, as you mentioned, is valued at over now £17 million and is on the market. Actually, interestingly, the socialite Isabel de Rouvray, she actually had to sue Prince Andrew and the Duchess of York because they still had not made their final payment on that chalet. So it was actually a rather nasty business there. And so divesting himself of that is a way for him to have immediate funds and also divest himself of the lawsuit at the same time.
So is it likely that he's going to need a lot more than the, what was it, $23.7 million that chalet is going to bring in? I mean, is he going to have to, Hillary, go to the Queen and say, "Mom, I need a little extra help"?
Well, yes, he refers to her as mummy, but yes, he is, and the Queen is stepping up to help him. This is actually, though, there are many insiders in the senior royals and courtiers who have a lot of issues with this because it is damaging, as we've talked about before, in the court of public opinion. And the Queen backing her son, obviously she's respected for having motherly love, but that does not reflect well on the royal family covering for a purported pedophile. Of course, he's innocent until proven guilty, but this does not bode well for the royal family. It's basically a lose-lose situation. But the recent lawyers that they have hired in the U.S., their fees are over $2,000 an hour, and this is going to be multi-millions before anything's even settled, depending on the ruling.
So Fergie apparently owned that chalet along with her husband, Andrew. So Rob Shooter, there's word now that she's likely to be subpoenaed if that case ends up in trial in southern Manhattan. That's got to be all the buzz in New York because Fergie loves New York. She kind of came here to have a new life, and that life is now coming to haunt her here.
Absolutely. I've met her many actual times here in New York City. We've been out for dinner several times too in New York City. This is very problematic because she is actually part of his alibi. So he claims the night, the one of the instances where he allegedly was involved with this young lady, that he was at a pizza parlor with his children, and his wife can confirm that because they are never not with their children together. So she's going to probably have to testify too. It's a very strange relationship they have. Although they are divorced, they still live together. They are still best friends. They're still very much involved in one another's lives. And I think the realization has now hit Fergie too, that if this affects Andrew, it's also going to affect her.
Boy, it's such an odd relationship. I like it. I mean, I do like the fact that they're good at co-parenting. I do the same with my ex. We do all sorts of things together, Christmas and Thanksgiving. People think we're crazy. So I get it. This whole notion about, you know, backing your ex-husband in this gross lawsuit is something a little different. Hey, Jim Murray, when we come back after the break, I want you to think through this question for me, because it's going to take your smart legal mind that you, I know you have, and I don't because you're a lawyer. The case that Virginia Giuffre settled with Jeffrey Epstein has lots of juice in it that's sealed. And Andrew and his lawyers want it unsealed because they think there's a clause in there that will absolve their client and get him off the hook. And there's a big development in it now. The Virginia Giuffre lawyers are saying, fine, have at her. Open up the case. I want to get your professional opinion on how scary that sounds for that new Los Angeles lawyer and for Prince Andrew when we're back after this. Back now with Hillary Fordwich, Jim Shooter, and Rob Shooter and Jim Murray. Pardon me for messing up. I'm so wrapped up in the minutiae of this case, Jim Murray, that only a lawyer could make it make sense. And that is that, you know, for a long time, Andrew just wanted to get a peekaboo into that case that was settled between Virginia Giuffre and Jeffrey Epstein, because I think he figured that there's an inner circle clause, meaning everybody in the inner circle gets protected and can't be prosecuted or gone after in a civil way if they're in Jeffrey's inner circle. That's a double-edged sword. Yeah, I don't think you want to be in Jeffrey's inner circle, but I guess if you're being sued and being in the inner circle protects you, that's a good thing. In any case, what do you make of the fact that Virginia's lawyers have said, fine, have as much of a look as you want. We still don't think you're going to get a benefit.
Well, look, you really hit this on the head. Prince Andrew's lawyers believe that there's either something in there, that settlement, that somehow vindicates Prince Andrew or insulates him. And to be quite honest with you, given the fact that they've not likely seen that agreement, you have to be very careful that you do not want to get what you ask for if you don't know what it is. And frankly, this could be more trouble than it's worth. The other thing that I thought was interesting, you were talking about selling the house. Prince Andrew must be the only person I know in real estate in the last 7 years who has made zero money, because he bought this chalet in 2014 for just under $23 million. He's selling it now for $23 million. But with respect, the other point you bring up, which is really interesting, is Prince Andrew wanted to kind of keep his relationship with Epstein at arm's length, saying, yes, we were close, but I didn't know all of these sordid events that were taking place. If somehow he's in this agreement and named in this agreement, having participated in some of these sordid details that Epstein admitted to in this settlement, that will hurt Andrew just as much as losing this case, because in many ways he's lost in the court of public opinion already. Now that he's answered this lawsuit, he's got to file an answer by October 29th. This is going to move forward. That means there will be depositions. There will be discovery. He will have to come to court. He will have to answer questions. And to be quite honest with you, the best thing he could have done early on is try to settle this case. He didn't do that, but I wouldn't count out a possibility of settling before this goes to court.
Whoosh, that would be awful for the Queen, I'm sure. I'll ask you about that in a second, Hillary. But first, Rob Shooter, what do you make of this Melissa Lerner? I keep hearing that she's one of those lawyers in L.A. that, you know, poof, makes these celebrity things go away. Is that true?
Yeah, that is. I mean, she has an incredible reputation of cleaning messy situations up, and I can't think of a more messy situation at the moment than this one. So he certainly has the right person, but often too, in the world of celebrity that I've worked in for a long time, the thing that makes things go away very quickly is a lot of money. It is not surprising that he's selling the one home that he actually owns. He doesn't really make an income, and so I think not only is this money going to pay off his expensive lawyers, he needs a ton of cash to clean this up. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if at the moment that's what they're trying to do. They do not want this to go to trial. Also too, let's remember, his mommy is one of the richest people in the world, and we know already that she's willing to pay to make this go away.
Well, you know something, Hillary, I had to dig up. I remember reading she was the richest woman in the world, and that was a Forbes thing. And then I realized over the years that's changed with Martha Stewart and Sarah Blakely and all the rest. But that said, Forbes does have her at earning about $100 million a year just off of one of her large properties, and Charles making about $28 million a year off the large properties. Just help me understand whether money really does help here, Hillary, because we're talking about the royals, and I can't imagine that woman would put a penny down to have her beloved son say, okay, let's just settle this thing and never be vindicated from it.
Well, a few things there. You mentioned many points. Actually, J.K. Rowling made that list as well with her books about Harry Potter. Mm. She was on one of those wealthiest women lists. But seriously, with regard to the Queen, she's using private funds, is purported, from the Duchy of Lancaster. And Lancaster is a duchy that she has separate from the actual taxpayer funds. So that's private funds that she's been using. And yet, of course, there is the sort of British contention that these are all still funds that have come at some juncture from the paying public. And I think that's the issue. The issue here is, how does the public basically respond? Because the royals rule at the whim and at the pleasure of the public. And this has gone down very badly. And whether or not Prince Andrew happens to be ninth in line to the throne or whatever his position, he's no longer ever going to have a royal role. That's something that he hasn't really accepted. He thinks there's some kind of coming back, but there isn't. The person that's actually put his foot down a lot is not just Prince Charles, but Prince William has been involved in this, and Prince William will have none of it. And he is also, just like he's been with his brother, he's very strong on who's going to have a future in the royal family.
Because he's going to be King Will, so I get it. Hey, thank you to all three of you. I've so appreciated it. Rob Shooter, Hillary Fordwich, and Jim Murray, you're so much smarter than I am, so that's why you keep coming back. Thank you, all three of you. Take care. And thank you, everyone, for being with us on Banfield tomorrow. Big break in the Murdoch case. We will update you tomorrow right here.